Diablo 4 hat eine Menge neuer Sachen auf dieser Gamescom angekündigt. Und das kann nur eins heißen: Wir müssen uns die Entwickler herholen und sie mit Fragen löchern. Dazu habe ich mir Stärkung geholt, meinen lieben Kollegen Benedikt. Hallo.
Hallo.
And we have two wonderful people from Blizzard here. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you on stage.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
So, can you introduce yourself? What are your jobs on Diablo 4?
Hi, I'm Brent Gibson. I'm the game director on Vessel of Hatred.
And I'm Tiffany Watt. I'm the production director on Diablo 4.
And you're a certified necromancer aficionado.
Just like you.
Yes, yes, which makes you a good person.
Maybe. I see. So we're dividing on the couch here. Yeah. Necros over there.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so what are you?
So we were just talking about this. Every time I start a new ARPG, I start with Barb. So I'd have to say Barb is my main.
That's like, that's difficult.
It's okay. I own it. I like it.
All right, all right. And Benedict, you?
Sorcerer, only answer.
All right, you should have said Barb, then we'd have camps.
Yeah. But
so we're winning over here with Team Necromancer.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah, Necromancer has two fans, so now we already won.
I'm on the side of the living, so...
To make it fair, Benedict, I'll leave you the first question.
Thank you. So how are seasons going to work with Vessel of Hatred, like when you have to divide the season, the add-on and non-add-on content for the players?
Yeah, one of the things that's really important to us is making sure that the core loop stays intact no matter what content we're releasing at any given point. And so regardless if Vessel of Hatred or not, the seasons will continue. You'll be able to get a lot of great, rich content. We're looking at adding a lot of new content for all those players that are going to be coming into Season 6. And so, yeah, like I said, it's really important that we keep that core loop together, and you'll be able to experience a lot of the new stuff coming.
And speaking of new stuff, how many new expansions have you already planned? Because you gotta be planning them already. The new one's coming out in a month.
Well, there's nothing new to announce today, obviously. But, you know, this is the type of game that, like, we're very passionate about expanding the universe all the time. And as long as the fans are showing up, we're going to continue to make a lot of great game. We're all in right now on Vessel of Hatred, which has a tremendous amount of amazing content that players are going to see. And so, you know, as we continue this journey with our fans, we look forward to making more content.
Yeah, we're dedicated to supporting Diablo 4 for years to come. And yeah. We are members of the community ourselves, Necromancers represent.
Yes.
And so the more content that we bring to the game is more content that we get to play. So we're
Necromancers bring their own community. Like that's
right.
One of their big advantages.
You are a very important part of our community.
Yeah.
Okay. You win.
But so I know you can't say anything specific yet, but one thing that has been publicly said, I think by Rod, is that the original plan was one expansion per year. Is that still something you're committed to?
You know, we're reevaluating our roadmap all the time.
Okay.
We want to get to a spot where we could be more open and talking to people about all the content that we have planned. And we, like Tiffany said, we have plans to be doing this for a very, very long time. So as far as like where we're at with that, that's something I can let Rod talk to probably more directly.
All right.
You can expect awesome content every year as we continue with seasons and future expansions.
All right.
So I was speaking to Rod Ferguson yesterday, and he told me that the most important thing about balancing is still keeping it fun.
Yes.
How do you keep nerfs fun?
How do you keep nerfs fun? You know, it's really, I like to talk about it as like harmony, right? So balance is something that we're always going to chase, but harmony is something that we always want to maintain. And so when we're looking at classes, it's always coming from a place of how are we lifting things up? Even if there are moments where we're like, you know what, the thing that we thought was going to be really good for this class might be overreaching a little bit, there's times where we have to be responsible and pull back. But ultimately, you know, the goal is to bring all of our players up. We know everybody's very passionate about the classes that they play, and keeping that harmony is really important to us.
Yeah, I think Diablo is so incredible because it's such a power fantasy.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure that whatever class you're playing, whatever season you're playing, whatever content you're playing, you feel powerful.
Yeah.
And so much of it is like emotional and how the player is experiencing the class. And I leave the numbers to Brent and his team. But we just want to make sure that regardless of how you're playing Diablo 4, that you just feel awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, in the same talk, I was talking to Gavin Wishaw, and he talked a bit about the Paragon and the new systems. Can you give a little insight on the Spiritborn legendary nodes?
Ah, so as far as like, we don't want to reveal everything about the Spiritborn. We're definitely looking at trying to introduce a new class that has a lot of new ways to play. And it's the really our first big swing at making a truly hybridized class. So whether it comes to how we're treating the legendary nodes or the items that we're going to be injecting, we really want that to feed into the idea of mixing and matching this class to come up with a lot of emerging builds. And so as far as the details for the legendary nodes, we're going to save that for a larger discussion later on. But it's definitely something that fits into the formula of trying to keep this as the most customizable class as possible.
Yeah, as Brent mentioned, next week we're actually doing a developer live stream that goes much deeper into some of the updates that we're bringing to progression, including updates to the Paragon boards for all of our classes. So definitely tune into that. So we don't have as many details to share today, because we want to make sure that we have a lot to talk about in about a week or so.
Yeah, and on one of the ways that we've been talking about that live stream is that the significance of Season 4's itemization changes are pretty equivalent to the type of things that we're doing with the progression updates that you're going to see coming out with Season 6. Progression updates are not going to be exclusive to Vessel of Hatred. It's something that is going to be available to everybody, and it's really going to refresh the way that you level through this game, so I'm really looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, we can touch a little bit on, we'll be talking about the updates that we're doing to the difficulty system itself.
Yeah.
As well as...
Oh, I'm like, very curious about that.
Yeah, so if you are a veteran player, there are, you just have a lot more capability to fine-tune the challenge that you're taking on.
Yeah.
And we also want to smooth the experience for maybe newer players to Diablo 4, just so there's a better experience for everyone that's encountering it. And like I said, Paragon updates. Just, we don't want to go overly complicated with how players should be interacting with the Paragon system. So, but that's all I will say for today, and save it for next week.
What, you can't give your necromancer buddy a bit more exclusive secret details that may get you fired?
You guys also have a secret handshake. I'm just really curious.
We couldn't tell you.
Okay. Yes. If we tell you, we'd have to kill you and reanimate you. So, yeah. But speaking of things that you have already shown, we've been able to play Nahantu here at Gamescom, and also at Blizzard before. So how much of the full region is that? How big is Nahantu compared to the regions we already have?
So Nahantu is the sixth region that we're bringing to Diablo 4, and we wanted to make sure that it felt just as enriched and content-rich as all of our other regions. So, I mean, I would say that's equivalent in size and experience.
Yeah, it's really, we looked at what it meant to the, like, what formula worked really well for the original regions, and we wanted to be able to bring that to Nahantu, and then tailor that to the type of content and story that we really want to tell. If you play the demo on the floor, you're going to experience a lot of the jungle region that we have in there. If you've noticed, we have a small portion that's still blocked off, so we're not showing everybody everything that's there, but this is a content-packed expansion that has so much for the players to play once it releases. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, there are new monster families that are unique to the Nahantu region. The Hollows, the Dregs, the Lacunae are coming back.
Yep. Brand new strongholds.
We have three new strongholds. I believe there are six total new biomes. Now, the demo on the floor here at Gamescom, primarily the jungle region, dense canopies, but we also have these rich red rock canyons.
Yep.
There's the Field of Giants, which is a really, really cool area of Nahantu. You know, we have the Dark Citadel.
Yep.
There's so much to explore, and there's new events, obviously, that the players will come across, new NPCs, new quests, so the campaign is deeply rooted into the region.
Yep.
You just cut on the Citadel, which is a endgame dungeon for 2 to 4 players, right?
Yes.
So, as a solo player, could I still finish it?
So, it is specifically designed to be co-op. One of the things that we're noticing is that our group of players that like to play with others has been growing over time, and we really wanted to introduce something to the endgame that was for them. But we also know that there's a lot of folks that maybe you don't have four players to play with readily at any given time. And so we've also introduced Party Finder. So if you have a really good gaming buddy that you normally play with and you want to fill out the party to four, Party Finder is going to be the way that you're going to get to that count. But it's not exclusive to just the Dark Citadel. This applies to all the activities in the game. This is another one of those features that the Vessel of Hatred isn't required to have it. We're going to be releasing it to the whole community. So we really want people to play together. We feel that the fun is extremely heightened when you're with friends and playing the game. And so we're trying to make sure that it's never been easier to do that in Diablo.
So the next question would have actually been about the group finder, so I already answered that, so I'll try a different one. How difficult do you intend the co-op dungeon to be? Because when it was rumored and announced, people compared it to a raid, which sparks thoughts of hours-long, deeply coordinated activities. So is that what you're going for, or is it more of a light, fun romp with a few buddies?
I think it's both, depending on your level of experience with it. There have definitely been playtests where it was a light, fun romp, depending on what our builds were and who you're playing with.
Yeah, for those hardcore players.
And there were playtests where it was hours of banging your head against the keyboard, even if we were familiar with the mechanics and the strategies needed.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so awesome about Dark Citadel is that it is a new experience to Diablo as a franchise. And I've had a lot of fun playing with our teammates watching them try to figure out the mechanics. And even when you know them, and if somebody fails, wow, like really call them. I think the greatest player stories have been some of the spectacular failures, but it's like, well, you know what the mechanics are, why aren't you just executing on them? And so I personally, that's been a lot of fun. Obviously not so much if you're a hardcore player, but I think I'm a hardcore player, so
But I can't wait to see that whole community give this thing a shot. I mean, it's one of those things where challenge is a part of the formula for this new mode. Mm-hmm. And we want people to explore it, discover the mechanics. We look at refreshing the reward caches every week. We want you to return to the Dark Citadel and make it a part of your core loop.
Yeah, also the Dark Citadel unlocks at Torment 1 difficulty.
Correct.
So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about our difficulty systems next week in that deep dive. But we want to make sure that that heroes are prepared for the challenge of Dark Citadel, and so we're building that into the difficulty system as kind of a gating process.
Would there be any exclusive rewards to it? Are you forcing people to play multiplayer if they want everything?
That is a very regular question. No, you're not forced to play it, for sure. However, it's an excellent source of getting that higher-end gear that you want to get. We also have, you get a currency as you're playing the Dark Citadel to get some really amazingly themed cosmetics at a vendor that's inside the experience itself. The Dark Citadel has this really cool theme where we're diving into the history of the Khazra. And so everybody's familiar with the Goatmen in the universe. And so this is tapping into its roots of how the Goatmen were created and how they're trying to rise back to power in a more sophisticated way than their Marauder family members have been trying in the current history.
Yeah, actually before you can access the Dark Citadel, there's an event that takes place outside.
Yep.
And the first Khazra are trying to gather the souls of the dead, as they do.
Yeah.
And your hero is there to try and save these souls. And it's a fun event. It really sets you up for your encounters inside the Dark Citadel. And our team has come up with just like the coolest bosses. I can't wait for everyone to see them.
All right.
You're expanding on the group content with that, but what about the guild content? There's not much reason to join a guild right now. Unlike in, for example, Immortal, where there's a lot of things you can only do in the guild. Are you going to expand on that?
Yeah, you know, like I was saying before, we're realizing that our community that likes to play social is growing. And even though we have a large amount of people who like to play by themselves, with this emerging, we actually have to be evaluating how we grow those systems. We don't have any plans for overly growing those systems in Vessel of Hatred, but in the long list of things that the fans have been asking about, this one's bubbling up to the top of the list, and so we're taking really solid looks at what we could do there.
So speaking of groups, you also have mercenaries now, so yes. You're not alone, even when you are alone. Players have, through various sources, deducted that there might be a fifth mercenary have been planned. Or so. What can you say about that? Are there more mercenaries planned? Were there more mercenaries planned and you scrapped one?
We actually, pretty much with every feature, we develop more than we actually release. And it's actually really deliberate that we do that because we want to be able to experiment and do things that are fairly unexpected. And then we like to edit down to the things that are the purest form of what we're trying to release to our players. And so, yeah, there was a bunch of brainstorming and development for additional mercenaries. The important thing to us is let's get this feature out to the community, check it out. It's got some really interesting new innovations that are beyond what you would see in D2 or in D3, like the reinforcement system that allows you to take the mercenary you leveled up and actually have them come in like a tag team fighting
game.
Yeah, like a fighting game to pull off a power under a condition that you define. And so we've picked the best of the crop to fit those systems and really highlight what we're trying to go for. Once it's out in the wild, as the community reacts to it and gives us a bunch of feedback, it's a feature that we'd really like to grow.
All right.
What happens if one of the mercenary dies? Do I even have to equip them, or are they just good on themselves?
We actually talked about, like, hey, should the mercenaries have gear themselves? And we actually found that it was a lot more fun to build the depth of the mercenaries and the customization into the talent and skill trees that they have. So as you're adventuring with your mercenaries, you're gaining rapport with them. And as you build rapport, you unlock more of their skill tree. And each of the mercenaries basically has two different paths on their skill tree. And that's where we saw a lot of the more interesting choices and depth. Now, if your mercenary does take a lot of damage on the battlefield, they will take a knee.
Yep.
And you have the option to either, just like a player, run over there and speed along their resurrection by clicking on them, or after about 45 seconds to a minute or so, they will get up on their own and rejoin you in combat. So similar to how it worked in Diablo 3, where temporarily they will be taken off the battlefield. Now, the mercenaries themselves do bring perks. Each of the four mercenaries has a unique perk to them, which is another cool thing about their customization. When they are they take a lot of damage and they're taking a knee, they're pausing, their perk is not active, so it may behoove you to run over to them if you can during combat to try and get them back up onto the battlefield, just like they are a player themselves.
So how big are these skill trees? Is it like D3 where it was, I think, four on each side, or are they bigger?
Oh, sorry, what was that again?
How big the skill trees are. Is it like D3 where I think it was four on each path?
Yeah, or? There are two branches for each mercenary that takes their theme and kind of like gives you two different ways to engage with it. I'd have to take a look at the node trees again to see all the different versions
for
all the different classes, but there's a lot of variety and options built into the way that they work.
Yeah, there's more depth overall in terms of customization, especially with the reinforcements. For example, like I do play Sorceress from time to time. I like fire builds. I like burning. I'm not a pyromaniac. But I often like to choose Aldkin, who is the cursed child, choose his fire skill tree so that he is amplifying my burning damage around me. I also like to, play the Necromancer. Doesn't have maybe as many mobility options as some of our other classes, so I do like to choose Varianna.
Yep.
The more I kill monsters, I start building these kill streaks, these massacre streaks, and then she starts buffing my attack speed and buffing my movement speed as well. And so I think there's just so many options, especially if I'm in a party, let's say with Brent. We each get to choose which reinforcement we want. So if I think about like the different opportunities for fine-tuning and customizing what we want to maximize with our party capabilities, I'm super excited. So,
And how powerful are these mercenaries compared to the Seneschal, for example?
Comparatively, I mean, the mercenaries are quite powerful. The way that we've looked at them is every class has a bit of a blind spot, and we wanted to make sure that the mercenaries themselves fill that blind spot. And so if you look at their abilities, it's kind of like adding additional powers to a class to round out their overall build. And so we're going to see a lot of players are going to want to be engaging with the system and adding the reinforcements to their skill set, and maximizing the perks for sure, with all the various class builds that we see with the original classes.
And on top of that, there's so much to talk about with mercenaries, but they also have a bartering system that comes with them. So they do have a mercenary den. You actually unlock the first mercenary Rahir right at the start of the campaign, and he takes you to the mercenary den, which is a tiny little hub in itself. It's where the Pale Hand, which is the group that they are a part of, lives, I suppose. And you will be able to acquire the acquisition quests for the other mercenaries there. But there's a vendor there. So again, as you're playing with your mercenaries and gaining rapport, you are earning these marks in which you can spend at the vendors. There are some mercenary vendor specific items, as well as just the capability to maybe get some other items that help you do other things in the game. So it's a deep system. We're very excited about it. I can't wait to see what the players think.
You're speaking about the mercenaries as a kind of levering out the blind spots of the classes. But will they also be able to open up entirely new builds for some classes?
I think you're going to see a lot of current builds that people are looking at right now emerging to some slightly different styles based on the mercenary you pick. Absolutely. And depending on if you're using them for reinforcements or you're having them following you around, it has a dramatic impact on the way that you look at power. I expect a lot of build guides to be edited based on what we're seeing with the mercenaries release.
All right, thanks a lot. We've perfectly timed it so that we're nearing the end of the slot. Thank you for your time, thank you for your answers. Benedikt, thank you for your questions. Und euch, vielen Dank fürs Zuschauen, sowohl auf der Bühne als auch da draußen.